Olá a todos e bem-vindos a esse episódio especial. Sim, estou dizendo isso em inglês porque temos essa estrela da nossa infância. Temos aqui conosco Paul Zalum, o ator que deu vida ao Bikman, do mundo de Bikman. Paul, obrigado, muito obrigado mesmo por estar aqui conosco.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
Paul, o mundo de Bikman foi uma das coisas que mais inspirou esse programa que a gente está fazendo aqui hoje. E fazia parte da nossa infância, da infância comum aqui no Brasil, né? No Brasil e boa parte do mundo. Então, bom, obrigado mais uma vez por estar aqui e por fazer parte da nossa vida.
Right on. Well, it's great to be here. I've been lucky to be able to go to Brazil a few times and perform, and the reception has always been great. I've made some good friends in Brazil, so I'm happy to be here.
Bom, vamos lá, Ju. Podemos começar com as perguntas?
Paul, vocês tinham algum plano para expandir e levar o mundo de Bikman para além do programa de TV?
Yeah, no, we didn't have any plans to do anything beyond making the TV show. After a couple of years of being on the air in the States, I got some requests from the studio to do some live appearances, and I decided to collaborate with the Exploratorium in San Francisco, and they worked with me to create a bunch of live science demonstrations. The Exploratorium is this kind of it's a science museum in San Francisco, but it takes a very different approach than the standard approach. Very influential, important science museum in terms of the way that they invent museum displays that are very hands-on. And I haven't been to their new space, but their old space was in an industrial, like a warehouse thing. And a lot of the stuff was just sort of down and dirty. It wasn't like gussied up and made pretty like you would make for a kids' museum. It had a very industrial feeling. And the way they explain things is very clear and very interesting. So Exploratorium, which is a museum that had a big influence on the creator of the show, Jock Church, it was very simpatico kind of outfit for me to collaborate with. They have a very playful kind of tone to their captions and the way the place is set up. And so anyway, I collaborated with them and then made an hour-long stage show called Bikman Live, and then schlepped it around, performed it in various places in the States and in Canada. So it just sort of happened by accident to begin with, that there was a demand for some live Bikman performance. And then that evolved into me making a live stage show.
Cara, isso é ótimo. Falando agora do mundo de Bikman, no momento em que você começou e as temporadas foram acontecendo, você sentiu que o show teria um tipo de impacto que de fato teve? Quer dizer, você pensou que, tudo bem, esse show será uma coisa que as crianças em toda a América, em todo o mundo, como é o nosso caso, eles vão lembrar com alegria e vão parar você na rua e dizer, bem, você é o Bikman. Você sentiu isso?
Yeah, no, not at all. I mean, for one thing, I of course I'm not recognized because I'm an old man now and I got a beard. When I'm clean shaven, I have been recognized in Brazil. It's happened a couple of times, been really hilarious. But in all the years that I did the show, even when I didn't have a beard, I didn't get recognized generally because I just look really different with the crazy hair and all of that. So I didn't have the kind of visibility I was going to say a normal actor, because I'm like an abnormal, I'm very abnormal. I'm a puppeteer. That's my background. So I don't really define myself as an actor very much. I call myself a performer, which is more like a Brechtian idea, like Bertolt Brecht idea of what an actor is. But anyway, that's theater arcane nonsense. I don't need to get into. My background is as a puppeteer, and I forgot what your question. What was your question?
Se você esperaria esse tipo de impacto até esse momento?
Right. Well, the thing is that the show was, you know, it was critically acclaimed in the States. So Steven Spielberg said it was his favorite kid show, and I was on the cover of TV Guide and a lot of television advocates for good children's television said really good things about the show. You know, the New York Times wrote features. A lot of people had really good things to say about the show. And the show got pretty good ratings. Nothing sensational. It's an educational show, and it was education dense. So if you put that up against cartoons, if kids are going to have a choice, the majority of kids are going to watch some dumb cartoon because they don't want to hear about school stuff on the weekend or whatever. But a certain segment of children that was very curious about these things or curious about things in general, the show really resonated. So the show was popular and it did well and, you know, all the rest of it. But it's nothing like what happened in Brazil and Mexico and in Chile and Argentina, where and Peru and Colombia and...
America Latina, ama você.
Yeah. The reaction there is much stronger. And I've tried to figure it out. I've asked people, you know, why the show is so popular down there. And I think there's something about the sense of humor and the way the show is shot, the way the show looks, that really resonates with the Latino sensibility. And plus the fact that the character was very close to the camera and talking directly to the kids. So the kids don't get any, there's no difference to children between somebody on the tube talking to them and somebody in the room talking to them. They don't make a huge difference between the two in terms of where that person fits in the emotional map of their life. So it was possible for kids to make a strong emotional connection to Beekman. And I think that's what explains the phenomenon in Latin America. It's about emotion, you know, it's not an intellectual thing. Oh, he was so good at speaking, or at teaching science, and it was so interesting, the show was funny. That doesn't really quite explain it. It's an emotional connection that character made with his eyeballs through the camera to the kids. I think but that's just my theory, so
I don't know. Não, isso é ótimo.
Meu nome é Beekman e vocês acabam de despencar no mundo de Beekman.
Paul, você influenciou uma nova geração de cientistas e entusiastas da ciência. Você tinha alguma noção da importância desse trabalho de encantar crianças na época que você fez? Crianças que hoje talvez possam, sei lá, ganhar um Nobel.
I want 10% of the prize money.
Okay, justo.
Yeah, I mean, when we made the show, we didn't really think about what impact it was going to have. It's not like we sat around and said, oh, this is going to do this or this is going to have, it's like you go to the factory and you make something and then you go home and then a few weeks later you turn on the TV and, oh, look, it's on the tube. And I'd watch the show and be like, oh, that was good. Oh, I remember what I was thinking when we shot that. Oh, I remember this, or oh, that didn't come out so well. Oh, that was kind of lame. Oh, that joke stank. Oh, that was good. Oh, that was great. But it, in terms of thinking beyond that, it didn't really happen. And because I didn't get recognized on the street, I didn't get reminded of the fact that I was on television in front of millions of people all the time. You know, as far as I'm concerned, I'm like nobody, and that's fine. It doesn't matter to me. I don't care about that. So, you know, it was almost like we did this whole thing in a vacuum where we just had no connection to anything. And then to find out that the show actually, both in the United States and Canada and Latin America and other countries in the world, that people will say to me, I'm a scientist because of you, or I'm a doctor, or I'm an educator, that it had that kind of effect where people got really interested in science and then pursued careers in science. That was something I never went through the mental steps to actually think, oh, this could have a positive effect. I mean, we just figured it's great to have a kids show that's not dumb and that's got jokes in it that's cool for adults, so it doesn't drive the parents crazy if they have to watch the show. They can enjoy it too. But that it would actually influence people into the careers that they would have in the future. I never made that. It could just be because I'm simple, I'm dumb, but it just never occurred to me. And so it's been a very beautiful, wonderful surprise and gift, you know, to know that people feel that strongly about it. And so, yeah, it's cool.
Muito bom. Mas pra viver o personagem Beakman, você se inspirou em um ícone ou alguma pessoa de divulgação científica? Alguém que tinha esse histórico? Você se inspirou em alguém que já tinha feito divulgação científica antes de alguma forma? Ou você simplesmente criou o personagem?
Well, I'm a puppeteer and I've made many puppet shows about different issues like climate change and pollution and procedures for firing nuclear weapons. I've done shows about the Iran-Iraq war and U.S. foreign policy and a lot of different stuff. So I come from a background of taking information and making it entertaining. So to do that with science was not that big a leap. I totally forgot your question.
Se você tem uma inspiração em qualquer pessoa, em alguma coisa.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I just forget what you're saying because I go down a path and then I forget where the hell I started.
Sem problema.
So, I mean, I had influences in that work, in the puppetry work, which included Lord Richard Buckley, who was a comedian in the 50s, a very obscure comedian in the 50s. And then I was very influenced by the Bread and Puppet Theater, which I joined when I was 19, and I still work there. I'm still heavily involved in terms of the politics and the way of making theater. That was a big influence. In terms of Beakman, a lot of people assume I was influenced by one of the kid science shows that was on the air when I was a kid, in particular Mr. Wizard, but I was not actually a big fan of that show. I didn't particularly like him or the concept. But what I was influenced by was Soupy Sales, who was a really goofy and quite famous kids show host when we were kids. And he was very naughty and kids knew it. There were a lot of double entendres and just, you know, it was just nasty. He was hilarious. The show was stupid, really stupid. The jokes are terrible. But adults loved it, and it became very, very popular with adults. It became like the hippest adult TV show on the air, and it was a kid show. And so we didn't get a lot of the jokes when we were kids. Like, we didn't get a lot of the dirty jokes and the weird jokes. But there was something about his joy and his whole persona that just radiated fun that really appealed to me. And the show, Soupy Sales' show, really did influence Beakman because... like Ray, you know, the guy whose hand comes in from the side and helps do stuff on Beakman's World, that was influenced by Soupy because Soupy had characters where just an arm would come in, White Fang and Bluetooth or something was their names. And just a lot of the sort of nutty sensibility was informed by Soupy Sales. And also the idea of using the frame of the TV as almost like a stage set, which is an old school idea of using the edge of the frame as an actual edge. Mm-hmm. So something, you know, Soupy did that a lot, and we did a lot of that too. Yeah. It's just a way of thinking about the TV frame and the way to make television in a more conceptual way.
Meu nome é Beakman, e vocês acabam de despencar no mundo de Beakman.
Pô, qual experimento ou explicação você mais gostou de fazer durante o programa? Você se lembra de alguma, sim?
Well, I often cite the time we did the show on snot, which is, I don't know the Portuguese word for it, but it's the stuff in your nose, you know?
Sim, era excelente!
Nossa, eu tava pensando exatamente nesse episódio.
Right. That was fun. The director, Jay Dubin, said to me, how would you do snot? And I said, oh, I would go up the nose. I would make an expedition up the nose. I said, I would build like a corridor and make it the nostril and put, you know. So anyway, what we ended up doing was he said, let's build it out of a sonotube. They're those big cardboard tubes that they use to pour foundations for buildings. So they take one of those and they put bubble wrap in the inside and then they put like special effects snot, like green disgusting crap on the inside, and they made like a hatch and so anyway, I liked that because it was stupid and it was fun, it was disgusting. and the kid Josie was in it. She was great. She was the first girl, and at one point I'm waving my hands around and some of the snot came off my hand and hit her in the face. And we had a thing where you had to keep going. If something went wrong, you just had to keep going. You weren't allowed to stop. Because a lot of times when we made mistakes, they would end up in the show. It was just interesting. So the snot like hit her in the face and she sort of went like that. You know, she jumped a little bit. She wiped snot out of her eye very, very slowly. And I got stuck in there for a while too. They went on a break and they left me inside the nostril in this hazmat suit, you know, hazardous materials outfit with the hood and all the rest of it. And I actually think that a costume that I own ended up in that show, if I'm not mistaken. That I had a costume home and I brought it to work and we used that for the show.
Yeah.
So it was just a lot of fun, and the snot got into my suit. So it was like in between my toes and squishing around. It was disgusting.
Ew.
It was a lot of fun.
Muito bom. Bem, e durante o programa, além do Beakman, você viveu muitos outros personagens, né? Aquele, bom, esqueci como é que era o nome em inglês. Em português era Professor Chatoff, né?
Era o Mr. I Am Boring?
Isso! Pô, e também tinha outros cientistas históricos, né? Você curtia fazer essas outras caracterizações ao longo do programa?
Oh, yeah, very much so. I mean, as a performer, it's always fun to play a lot of different parts. There was Art Byrne, who was the chef.
Sim!
In Art's Diner.
Sim, um chefe nojento.
Yeah, that was really fun. It was always fun to figure out, like we would just figure out last minute stuff that would be really disgusting. Like I would sneeze into the food.
Yeah.
Or I think one time I had a tooth that dropped into it or my gum or something. I actually sat in the food. It's just so disgusting. And it was just, yeah, it was fun to shoot. They would put Vaseline on my face to make it look like I was really sweaty. And they would put stipples, so I had a lot of whiskers, and he was basically Beakman, but with a really strong New York accent. And then all the different characters I got to play. I got to play Einstein. He was really fun. I just did him as old Yiddish Jewish guy with a New York accent, New York Jewish accent. And I played Ben Franklin, and where I kind of channeled the comedian Rodney Dangerfield. The writers, after we did, I did Galileo in like the first episode, I was Galileo, and they kind of got the idea. They came to me and they said, do you want to play other characters? And I said, yeah, that'd be great. And I told them, you know, I can do quite a few different accents and stuff. And it comes from doing puppets, you know. When you do a puppet show, it has 8 or 10 or 20 or 40 characters. You need a lot of different voices, and sometimes you will use accents. So I was used to doing that. The latest puppet show that I've been taking on the road, which is called White Like Me, that show, I think Lynn told me there's over 50 characters in the show.
Whoa.
So, it's just second nature. I've been doing it a long time, and it's easy because you just look at the objects, and as you look at it, you just do the voice for it, and you look at the other one, and you do the voice for it, and by seeing it, it's easier to be it. And then to do acting, you just put the crap down and you do it yourself. So there's not a big difference for me from being doing the puppetry and doing the acting in terms of the performing. It's like I'm the puppet.
Muito legal. Bem, e depois do programa? Você continuou na TV, quis outras coisas, se focou no show de marionetes. O que você fez desde o fim do mundo de Beakman?
I did a bunch of stuff while we were doing the show. We ran around and tried to make some film deals. I got involved in the Hollywood thing. We made a TV pilot, and we had a property for a while, Rat Fink, that was Ed Big Daddy Roth's invention. From the custom culture, car culture, Southern California, customizing car world. And we came very close to making a deal, making the movie, but that ended up going south. So I did that for a while and made some industrials, some films with Beakman, and this TV pilot and other stuff. And then I started doing my puppet shows on the road again, started rewriting, writing new shows and taking them on the road. I did a little bit of acting auditions, But I remember one time, just the stuff I would end up reading for was just so stupid. And the lines were stupid. And, you know, that I remember I auditioned for a Mission Impossible movie.
Mesmo? Qual?
I don't know. the script was so stupid. The lines were so stupid. It was like, I just can't do this. I don't want to do this. I'm not interested in saying stupid stuff just to make a living. You know what I mean? Life is too short. So I decided that the stupid stuff that I write was more interesting than the stupid stuff that other people wrote. Yeah. So I wanted to do my own stupid material instead. and so we, in the meantime, I've made a few different puppet shows that I've taken on the road and travel all over. The one I'm currently doing, I've done throughout the U.S. in all the major cities in the country, in L.A., New York, Atlanta, and D.C., and rural communities and really small communities in the country. And then I've also played in Turkey and Estonia and Slovenia, in Sicily and France. So it's the show has traveled around quite a bit, and you know, that's been great. It's a totally different kind of work and kind of job and really fun. And we made two movies I made with a painter, Sandow Burke, and those films we made. One of them was a film about a fictional war between San Francisco and Los Angeles. So it was a comedy about a non-existent war. And the other one was a toy theater version of Dante's Inferno. And that was a feature using toy theater and telling the story of Dante, but setting it in basically in a city that looks a lot like Los Angeles.
Caraca!
Meu nome é Bikman, e vocês acabam de despencar no mundo de Bikman!
Sobre o mundo de Bikman, tem alguma razão para o show ter sido cancelado?
Well, the thing is, they only needed 91 episodes to go into the second run syndication, which is the goal that the TV shows used to try to attain. I don't know if the business has changed so much now, I don't really know. But in those days, you needed a certain number of episodes that you could then sell to television stations for them to show them in reruns. So like Friends, the TV show Friends, you would need 90 episodes or I don't know, 100 and something episodes so that you could sell them to individual stations or consortiums of stations or whatever to show in reruns. If you only had 10 shows, you couldn't do it because it was only 10 shows. So you needed to reach a certain threshold. 91 was the threshold they wanted to reach. And they weren't in it to educate kids. They don't care about that stuff. They couldn't care less about what positive effect or anything like that. If they did care, then they would have made more of a big deal out of it, and they would have made more quality toys and would have tried to extend the franchise and build on the franchise. But they didn't. It was not nurtured in a very positive way to keep it alive by the studio. The studio just didn't really care that much about the show.
Cara, isso é muito triste de ouvir. Muito triste.
Yeah, I mean, if it had been PBS, if we had been on the public station, the governmentally funded stations, I think they would have maybe taken a little bit more of a long-term approach. And but anyway, you know, it's it is what it is. And we had a nice run and we got to play for a long time and it would have been fun to do more episodes for sure. I always enjoyed it. It was fun. You know, we had a great time in the set. We just laugh all day long.
Posso imaginar.
Yeah, we just totally had a great time. And, you know, my fellow performers, Mark Ritz, who played the guy in the rat suit, wonderful guy, great sense of humor. Just had a wonderful personality, very warm and fun, loved to kid around, extremely talented, you know, absolutely brilliant guy, became a very close friend of mine. And then Senta Moses and Alana Ubach and Eliza Schneider, the three women that played the young lady on the show, they were all fun. They all had a good time. They brought what they had to the table. The director, Jay Dubin, totally crazy, very funny, New York guy, talks like New York. In a lot of ways, is really a big inspiration for the character. Mark Waxman, the executive producer, and his team of writers, and they did an amazing job because they had to take all this complicated scientific information and make it simple so that a kid could understand it, and to take the theory of relativity and figure out how to explain that in 6 minutes is pretty amazing.
Yes.
And the prop guys, we had these union prop guys who were great, and this one guy, Ron Giancula, he would come up with ideas sometimes. He was the guy who played Ray, the guy whose hand that came in with props and stuff. And so he would come up with ideas from time to time. And Jay would say, no, forget it. Or he'd say, yeah, good idea, let's do that. But you're not supposed to do that as a prop guy in a TV show. That's like against the rules. So he went on another show and he made a suggestion, and the producer of the show said, one more suggestion from you and you're fired. But that was, it wasn't our attitude. Our attitude was like, oh, that's cool, he's got a funny idea, let's try it. Or Jay would say, no, it's a bad idea, I don't want to do it.
Wow.
it was a very open set, and a lot of fun, a lot of laughs, not a lot of tension. And it probably came across.
Meu nome é Bickman, e vocês acabam de despencar no mundo de Bickman.
Bom, a gente começou essa conversa dizendo que o programa teve impacto na gente. Mas ele afetou você? Quer dizer, depois de ser o Bickman, alguma coisa mudou? Você já gostava de ciência ou começou a gostar mais depois de virar o Bickman? Qual a sua relação com a ciência hoje em dia?
Well, I've always, since I was a kid, been really interested in the natural sciences, which is to say, I don't know what the expression would be in Portuguese by natural sciences, but basically...
natural sciences, ciências naturais,
right.
That's okay.
Well, that's convenient. That's good. flora and fauna, and the symbiosis between various plants and animals, and ecological systems, and how these systems work, evolution. Or that is the end of science I find particularly interesting and compelling. One of the things that's interesting about science is that it gives you a different way of looking at the world. So by studying science, certain aspects of science, I can, for example, go into the woods in Vermont in the Northeast, in a rural state, and I can look around in the woods and figure out what's going on, what happened there 100 years ago, what happened 200 years ago, what's going to happen in the future, what's the relationship between these various plants and animals that are going on. And I think that's what's interesting about science, is that it's this base of knowledge that you can have that will allow you to look at the world in a different way and to see how things are connected and how things work. And that if you have any kind of curiosity inherent in you, then it's great to get educated in science, because then you can figure out what the heck's going on. And it's just interesting to me. Like on the highway, they have these things that are supposed to keep your car from going off the road. And I noticed in Vermont, where I spend time up in the Northeast, that they were replacing them, instead of with metal, they had wooden posts, and the posts had holes cut in them right where they went into the ground. And I guess just through my knowledge that I had learned in school and also on the TV show, I realized, oh, it's got a hole so that when the car hits it, it'll break. And by breaking it, it'll absorb the energy. And if the car hits something that breaks, it's better than if the car hits something that doesn't break.
Yes.
Because if it doesn't break, your face goes into it and your face breaks. But if the thing breaks, it absorbs some of that energy. So it's just the idea of how these things alongside the road are designed to absorb energy from a crash and not create resistance. It's like they make light poles now in the city. The big lights, they're made to break. When you hit them, they break. In the old days, they made them so if you hit them, they didn't break. I guess because they didn't want to pay to repair them or something. But we knew science then, just as we know now. It's like, why the heck weren't people wearing safety belts in 1925 or 1930, seat belts in cars in 1940? We knew the science behind it, We knew the physics behind, you really don't want this loose object in the car to be flying around in an accident.
Yeah.
But it took us a long time to say, oh, well, let's do something about it. So it's important we know science so that we can make our lives survivable. my interest in it is as another way of looking at the world, another way of understanding what's going on.
Sim, muito bom, muito bom.
E, Paul, quem é o seu herói da ciência?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I guess Alan Turing pops in my mind, the Enigma machine guy. But he was more of a mathematician. I mean, he was a really interesting guy, and you know, they made a Hollywood movie about him and all of that.
Yes.
I hold him in high regard, and I think Nikola Tesla is another really interesting figure in the history of science. I just read a quote from him the other day where he totally predicted the cell phone.
Yeah.
I mean, he just described this device that you could walk around with anywhere and it connected to everything and it did everything. It was like, oh my God. And I don't know, it was like in the 1920s or maybe it was earlier, but Nikola Tesla, the famous inventor of radio and competitor of Edison, I believe, right? Tesla?
É, isso aí.
Meu nome é Bikman, e vocês acabam de despencar no mundo de Bikman.
Bom, e hoje? Pô, pensando em hoje, com tudo que há por aí, divulgação científica para crianças, você tem algum plano para agora, ou num futuro próximo, reviver o Bikman, ou alguma coisa assim? Digo, para voltar a fazer educação científica para criança, ou mesmo para adultos?
Other than doing the live shows, the stage shows, and I've been touring three of them. The one, the Beekman Live I was telling you about, and the second one was called Beekman on the Brain, or Everything You Ever Want to Know About the Brain, But You Were Thinking Too Much to Ask. And then a third one called What's Going On Here, Beekman. So inventing those shows, writing them, putting together was actually really interesting and really fun, particularly the one on the brain, where we had to pretty much invent ways of showing how the brain works. And I had a whole system for explaining the nervous system, the combination of the spinal cord and you know, the connections to your brain and all of that, explaining how it works. And I did it with my drawings. I had these really crappy drawings I don't do. They're just like awful, but are funny and goofy and stupid looking. And kind of fit that stupid Beekman aesthetic of the goofy cartoons. You know, I don't know if you remember the cartoons that were on Beekman's World. They were animations, very simple animations. Those were made by a guy named Wayne White, who worked on Pee-wee's Playhouse, and who has become a very famous artist, actually. And so that sensibility of those little animations, and taking that and inventing a way of explaining something very complicated is very interesting to me. And then having jokes in it and making it compelling for kids. And but other than that, I think it'd be really hard to make like new Beekman shows because they were very expensive, had a really big fancy set, like very expensive set. And in this day and age of television, it's not possible to do that. Make a kid show that costs up $250,000 an episode. That's just never going to happen.
Era $250,000 por episódio?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was a union crew and, you know, big stage and you know, it was a live action kid show. I mean, they just don't do those anymore. A live action educational kids TV show. I don't know. There are shows, but they don't. They don't necessarily have like a cast, and well, I don't know what I'm talking about actually, because I don't watch television. It's not my hobby. It's not something I'm hugely interested in. So, I end up watching a lot of documentaries. So, I'm a boring guy. What can I tell you?
Nada disso. Mas bom, acho que você respondeu algo assim nessa linha, mas você acha que pode haver qualquer coisa parecida com o mundo de Beekman? Digo, no futuro próximo. Quer dizer, a próxima geração vai ter o seu próprio Beekman?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is about science, the science generally is not going to change. although there will be some discoveries that will make some of the material in the show obsolete. I think Beekman said at one point, everything goes somewhere, nothing disappears. And I think in advanced physics now, they're not so sure about that. They think maybe some things do disappear. it should be evergreen. I don't know how dated it will look and sound. I mean, I guess it does already have a little bit of a dated feel to it. With the sort of MTV style editing and all of that. I mean, the show had a very unique look because the camera was tilted.
Yeah.
And the performers were very close to the camera, and the camera never moved.
Sim, mas você não acha que isso era até mais avançado pro seu tempo? Digo, hoje em dia um monte de youtuber aqui na internet faz isso. Seus programas são assim, olhando pra você, olhando pro telespectador, olhando nos olhos. Bom, é possível que algumas explicações possam estar desatualizadas, mas digo, o senso de humor ainda é muito, muito bom. Eu assisti recentemente e gostei pra caramba, de novo, né? E não é só aquela coisa da nostalgia. É realmente bom, as explicações são muito boas. Mas a minha pergunta é se você acha que pode ter alguma coisa feita com um novo Beekman, atualizando as informações, mas com o mesmo espírito. Aquela coisa de ciência divertida, sabe?
Yeah, well, if I were to do it again, the way I would do it is with puppets. Because with puppets you can create a sensational set, and instead of it costing a few $100,000, it can cost like $9. And I would do toy theater, I'd make little paper puppets this big, and there's a lot of jokes and gags you can do with it, and so you would use a Beekman puppet, and then you can pretty much do anything that you can draw, and that you can do anything.
Yes.
And then what would be interesting is if while you're seeing the puppet show go on, then occasionally you would cut to me like leaning over the stage with the puppets, and you'd see me doing voices and shit, and I'd be wearing the wig and the coat and all that.
Whoa.
So that would be the only live actor in the thing, would be my ass, like, leaning over the thing and just wrap around, and then you'd cut back to the puppet show.
Nossa, isso seria incrível!
And I think that way, you're not competing with the old show, which is impossible. You just can't compete with the old show. It'd be something so completely different that there would be no real comparison.
Cara, por favor, faça isso.
And doing short episodes, doing 2-minute or doing something like for YouTube and stuff. I'm actually talking to somebody in Brazil about doing something like this. And it would be easy to dub and all that stuff. I'm interested in that realm. I mean, I travel a lot for a living, and I'm getting kind of tired of getting on the plane and dealing with all that stuff. So... I would like to find another way to pay the rent. Maybe that'll be part of the picture in the future.
Nossa! Quer dizer, então, que a gente pode ter grandes novidades suas num futuro próximo.
Eu tenho certeza que os nossos ouvintes vão adorar essas novidades.
Yeah, it would be, it's an interesting idea. And it's just sort of, I mean, I've kicked around with the idea in the past. Because I made a Beekman puppet for the Brain Show. We had a little puppetry section of the Brain Show. And so we video projected me doing these little paper puppets. And there was a puppet of me. And there's a lot of different gags and business that you can do with those things. You can just fake a lot of stuff. It's been kicking around in my head. And I should, we'll see.
Se nós, Psycasters, pudermos ajudar de alguma forma, seria um prazer e certamente uma honra.
All right.
Meu nome é Beekman e vocês acabam de despencar no mundo de Beekman.
Então, tendo sido o ator que deu vida a uma das nossas maiores inspirações, minha pergunta seria, por que que você acha que a ciência deveria ser divertida? Perguntando de outra forma, você vê alguma possibilidade de explicar e mostrar a ciência sem ser de forma divertida? Tipo o professor Chatoff?
I think it's an interesting approach with science to make it fun, to put it in a context that is comedic and amusing, and to use media like comics and puppets and characters and acting and all that stuff to communicate stuff. I think science is particularly well suited for that. Like, I don't know. I think like history would be more difficult. You know, for example, doing a show about World War II with a lot of jokes in it. I'm not sure. I'm not sure how the hell I would do that, because there's not a lot of funny that that I can imagine being associated with World War II. But with the science just sort of lends itself towards it. And I think, you know, you could do the same with mathematics. And I mean, it's always good to have a sense of humor, right? It seems to help educating ourselves, educating other people, is if you can have a sense of humor and a sense of lightness, a lightness of being, it seems to help. So I'm, you know, I'm a humorist. That's what I've been doing since day one. So I'm a big believer in it. And it made sense to me. Why wouldn't you? And I know that, you know, there was some criticism of the show, and they said, oh, why do they have to make it funny? You know, that's just, science is good enough and blah, blah, blah. But they're just cranky old cranky people who would say that. I just don't agree with that. You know, humor is a great way to open people up to new ideas. Humor lets us drop our defenses, and humor is another device where it allows us to look at things in a different way. And I think there's great power to that. And so, yeah, you know, jokes are good. I'm a big believer in it. You got to laugh, because before you know it, you're going to be dead. So might as well have some laughs in the meantime.
Cara, muito bom ouvir isso. Muito obrigado.
Oh, you're welcome.
Paul, você poderia deixar uma mensagem para os nossos ouvintes, fãs do SciCast, principalmente fãs do Paul e do Bickman?
Yo, Psycasters, it is Paul Zaloom, that's me, otherwise known as Bickman from Bickman's World, saying hello and goodbye.
Muito obrigada, Paul. Mais uma vez, é uma honra, eu sou uma grande fã.
Paul, brigadíssimo. Muito obrigado mesmo pelo seu tempo.
You're very welcome. Yeah, it was my pleasure.